Good morning. This is Lance Kenmore with the Kenmore team, and I'd like to welcome you to this week's edition of the Tri-Cities Real Estate Update. We're here every Saturday morning right here on News Talk 870. As always, you can contact me, Lance Kenmore, anytime direct on my cell phone at 727-8977 or visit us on the web at kenmoreteam.com. Once again, I always like to thank John for hosting. John, how you doing over there?
Doing well. The weather's getting better.
Yes.
And the weather's getting better.
And the weather is getting better. Yes, we've had less wind, a lot of that sunshine. Notice some of those yards starting to green up a little bit out there, and some flowers starting to pop. So,
and our neighbor's deposits are helping my yard grow.
Ah, yes, I'm sure that some of that is unwanted, but I'm sure that yes, that can happen. So,
yeah.
No, it is a busy time of year. We're definitely, you know, we had talked a couple of weeks ago about the early spring market and how busy everything had been, and I think that has been reflected in our numbers for sure, and I'll have a little report on that here shortly. Generally, we have in the studio with us Mr. Mike Denslow at Home Street, but he had to duck out on us this week, McKay. I think there was something potentially about his mom's birthday, something that needed to be picked up. It was, and I mean, mom's birthdays and stuff that need to be picked up, that's a big deal, right?
That's okay.
We're gonna excuse him on this absence for sure.
Now, so. You realize, of course, he will not want to take advantage of financial advice from me, so... I am not filling his role in the traditional manner.
Well, I think that'll keep us out of trouble and we'll be safe. But I will still get your opinion, McKay, on these things 100% for sure.
Okay.
We always like to start off with our crazy celebrity real estate house story. And actually, McKay, this one's going to be... under $1 million.
Oh, so paltry.
I'm actually taking you to Fresno, okay? And there's not a lot of these stories. I don't know if we've ever had one come out of Fresno. But there was a family there, Roxy Meridian, and her husband lived there. They were kind of part of the weekend jet set crew in San Francisco.
Okay.
And so they had had many like famous artists that had come over and stayed at their house in Fresno, over beautiful up on the bluffs, overlooked the river. Had actually had folks there such as Charlie Chaplin, famous Soviet ballet dancer Rudolf Norev had been to their house. So the list of celebrities that had frequented their house on the weekends is pretty incredible. Now, what happened is very interesting, and I had no idea, but it was interesting background on this. I was like, how did this family know all of these people? Well, actually, Roxy's family, she had inherited her wealth. Her Armenian father had invented the very first grape bleaching machine that made the golden raisins.
Oh.
And so, I mean, this wealth went back, you know, a long, long time. And then they had settled in that Fresno Valley as part of that. So really, really interesting story. No kids. So the house reverted to a trust. And then all the proceeds from that sale are going to go to Fresno State and University of California in San Francisco, because like we had talked about, they had so many friends in that arena, in that area. So on the market for $950,000. I promised you under $1 million.
That's reasonable.
And very, very specific architecture modeled after Japanese architecture that they had seen on their trips. So
very cool.
Really, really unique property. So I learned something on there. I had no idea about that before the story. Now, we always then revert to a local story that lets you know what's going on in our local real estate market. And the first 2 months of data released from the Tri-City Association of Realtors showing total number of solds in the market for January and February We thought we were having the early spring market. You heard Mike and I talk about it based upon activity in our office and how busy things have been. And the numbers are a very, very big reflection of that. Just in January and February, 569 homes sold. Now, last January and February, only 452 homes sold in January and February. So starting off on that two-month period with basically a 24% increase in the number of homes sold. So
if you multiply by the rest of the year, that comes out to 3,414.
That's going to be a big number. So now part of that we have to say, okay, was there some pent-up demand last year from Snowmageddon? Mm-hmm. Absolutely there was. And that very well could have been, you know, if we remember last year, what ended up happening after Snowmageddon is we had May and June up in the 400s. So mm-hmm. very, very large numbers. So it's going to be really, really interesting to see what will happen if we continue this trend of staying ahead of the curve and we're going to have the biggest year of units sold ever in Tri-Cities.
Well, if it continues at that pace, it would be over 3,400.
Absolutely. So really, really interesting looking at those numbers coming out of the market. And we knew we had been busy. We knew the weather, you know, we were having an early spring market. Interestingly enough, that is what that's done because of the large number of sales. Even with newer homes coming on the market, that's kept our inventory still at that absurdly low number of hovering around 500 homes on the market, just mm-hmm. under. And so when you're looking at data like that coming on and you're saying, okay, we basically are having, you know, an average of 275 sold each month. One of the things you look at is, you know, what is the market absorption rate, you know, the inventory supply rate also. And that's a 1.8 month supply of homes. Obviously, we consider a balanced market to be six month supply of homes. So
we're a little off there.
Still leaning in that factor of you really have to be on your toes when you're out there looking. So, of course, one of the things we do is Mike and I get together each week and we, as we're researching for the show, what are we going to talk about and what's relevant? And one of the things we've seen happening and continue to happen, there was a little bit of a reprieve from this, you know, over, you know, the end of last year. We actually got to, you know, in October, we had, you know, briefly just hit 700 homes on the market and we thought, mm-hmm. whew, we're finally there.
Over the hump.
But now we're not. We're back into that dangerously low territory. And what does that create? That creates an environment of multiple offers. More than we've ever, you know, seen in the Tri-Cities market over the course of the last 2 years. And so what we have to do is talk a little bit about what are kind of the mechanics of that multiple offer and what should I be expecting? And I tell you what, I'm going to write down with the number one thing and, you know, Mike's going to be, you know, his bad for missing the show because here's his opportunity. But as I prepared for the show, the number one thing, and it doesn't matter. We're going to look at this today from two perspectives, the seller's perspective and the buyer's perspective.
Mm-hmm.
But in both situations, the number one thing that I wrote down is considering the buyer's finances, looking into the buyer's financial situation, mm-hmm. where are they at? Number one, serious buyers will include a pre-approval letter with their offer. That it seems like a no-brainer, and you would think if you listen to this show, you would think that's just commonplace and you would never get offers that don't have it. That's not the case. We're still seeing people that are, you know, reckless enough to submit an offer without the pre-approval. And if you're a seller and you're evaluating four offers that came in on the property,
mm-hmm.
the number one thing you're going to look at is, are they paying with cash or financing? And if they're paying with financing, do they have a pre-approval letter? And if they don't, 9 times out of 10, the seller's going to say, well, I'm not even going to consider that offer. I'm not even going to look at it. So you were out of the running before you even got started. The next thing that happens, and the more serious buyers that are working with a professional and that is coaching them along this way, is the really, really good offers then say, well, I did get a pre-approval letter for 10% down, and I'm good to go. On top of that, when they submit their offer, they are submitting proof, bank account statements or copies, that they have the 10% down liquid and the closing costs. So the really smart buyers are not just submitting the pre-approval letter, they're submitting also a copy of their bank statement showing that they have the 10% available to make the purchase. So it's just another indication to say, to you want your offer to stand up on the table, you know, if it could be animated, and say, pick me, pick me. And so you're throwing some of these items in there that are going to make that happen. Obviously, if it's a cash offer, having the proof of that cash, those cash funds available to go. If you're looking at two cash offers, and one of them supplied to you a bank account with the matching name of the offer that's on there and showing that they have all the funds in the account to purchase the house versus one that did not do that, you're going to seriously take a hard look at the one that did, because you get the feeling that they were more responsible when they submitted that offer.
Yeah.
And so that's a big thing to really be looking out for with what you can be doing there.
Well, it basically comes down to a competition.
And that's it, and that's exactly what it is. And so preparing to win that competition and setting yourself up in the best possible light is one way that you can do that. The next thing that I wrote down on there that can really help is working with a professional, working with a professional agent that has been through the process. When you look at our buyer's agents over the course of the last 3 years, all of them have been in multiple offer situations and one for their clients. They've also had the ability that with our seller specialist, we also have the ability to see what doesn't win multiple offer situations. We get to see hundreds and hundreds of these offers and these situations to the point where we know, you know, generally what a seller is going to pick, what they're looking for. So we'll actually have, I call them like a mini like battle royale in our office. So we have a unique competitive advantage where we'll take our seller's agents who primarily work for the sellers and negotiate on the seller's behalf, and we'll stick them in the room with our buyer's agents and we'll say, okay, beat them up. Like present an idea of how you're presenting an offer, go to town, pretend like you're doing this for your buyer, and then we'll have our seller's agent say, okay, here's what my seller said 3 weeks ago. Here's what one said 2 weeks ago. Here's what one said last month. And I have them just hit them with all the hard objections of the problems they have with the buyer agent's offer. So that's how we do practice, you know, and role play in our office through those situations. Because then the next time our buyer's agent is in that situation, they have that advantage of having seen 7, 8, 9, 10 times more what could possibly happen. And so we find that training absolutely invaluable for our agents. And in the end of the day, then provides superior service to our buyers. Because when you're competing against three other offers in town and other buyers, you have to know what those tricks are to make your offer better. When we come back from our first break, we're going to go over one of those tools in the tool chest, and that is called an escalation addendum. As a buyer, how to protect yourself in an escalation situation with competing bids.
Ooh, we'll hear that right here on News Talk 870.
Welcome back to the Tri-Cities Real Estate Update. Today we've been talking a little bit about the state of the market, our continuing lower inventory. I do know we have some amazing builders and developers out there just working like all get out to get some more inventory on the market for buyers out there looking. But in the meantime, as we continue in that lower inventory environment, we do see multiple offer situations on many of the best properties that are out there. So today we're kind of going through some of those strategies. I always end up running out of time with great topics like this, and so I want to get our new inventory out front there. We have some fantastic new houses hitting the market to fill the void for some of this inventory. Number one, 2303 West 19th out there in Kennewick. That's a four-bedroom, two-bath Rambler with RV parking, 1,760 square feet. Open layout, formal living room, spacious kitchen. You've got plenty of storage space, breakfast bar, opens up to the family room. They've gone through and done a lot of laminate wood flooring throughout the kitchen and family room. Split bedroom design, so you've got the private master. Really, really nice property. And that's priced at $267,500. So kind of right in that sweet spot of where a lot of the market's looking. Pick number two, 2014 West 21st in Kennewick. This is a three-bed, two-bath, another Rambler that has laminate wood floors, tile flooring in the kitchen and bathrooms. It is 1,618 square feet. Awesome living room with dual-sided fireplace into the dining. All appliances are staying here. Large walk-in closet in the master. Really, really nice property. They just did new HVAC last year.
Ooh, that's big.
And this one's coming in priced at $249,900. So another one of those, you know, the big deal right now is, gosh, I can't find anything under $250,000 that's decent. And so those are two fantastic properties in that range. Pick number three. Now, this is like an estate type property. This is a four bedroom, four bath, plus an office, stucco home, 2.58 acres out in Badger Canyon. Absolutely just done up to the nines. Great room concept, big stone fireplace, tile floors, wood wrapped windows, you know, 9 foot ceilings and doors. So absolutely fantastic. Granite counters throughout. I mean, this place is really an estate, and that is $530,000. So 2.5 acres out there in Kennewick and Badger Canyon for basically what, you know, is seemingly a brand new house, just a couple years old.
Wow.
So some good opportunity we've got out there with some great inventory and new inventory coming on the market all the time.
Sounds like a motivated seller.
They are out of the area, job transfer over to Portland. Absolutely loved what they had here, but had to move for a job. So there you have it. And it's still, we see that people are always like, why do people come and go and move? Well, big life changes.
Yes.
And job can be one of them. One of the things we were talking about before the break, and we kind of mentioned we were going to go into, and that is we see more than we ever have in the past in our market, and that is what's known as an escalation addendum. So you know that you're going to be competing against another offer, or the agents kind of run their competing offer situation in what we kind of call a little bit of like an auction style situation, where they said, hey, everybody has until, you know, Sunday night at, it's Friday now, everybody has until Sunday night at 9 o'clock to give us their highest and best offer. Well, one of the things you can do with your offer is you can present what's called an escalation addendum. And so the language in the escalation addendum in paragraph one starts and says, if the seller receives a competing offer for the property prior to accepting this offer with a net price equal or greater than the net price of our offer, then our net price shall be increased to blank amount more than the net price of the competing offer.
And then you figure out with your client
what they're willing
what
to do.
The blank amount will
so
be.
You could say, so if there's four other offers, I will beat the next best offer by $2,000 or $3,000 or $500. And the beauty of the form, though, because the first thing that comes to mind in there is risk. Like, oh my gosh, well, what if the other offers $20,000 over list price? I'm not willing to do that. The beauty of the form, though, is the next line says, in no event, however, shall the new price of my offer exceed. So you can cap how high you're willing to go. So, for instance, there might be a house that is $200,000, and that's a very competitive price point right now. It's a beautiful house, lots of upgrades, $200,000. And you're an agent, you're working for your buyer, and the agent representing the seller calls me and says, hey, Lance, we got four offers tonight, so we're giving everybody till tomorrow night at 9 o'clock to get back to me. So I can go back to the client and say, hey, that house is listed at 200. There's four other offers. We're supposed to give them our highest and best offer by tomorrow night at 9. Go home, sleep on it. Let's talk in the morning, see what you want to do. So we talk in the morning, and the client comes back to me and says, well, Lance, I'll tell you what. I have looked and looked. We've been looking for a couple weeks. I know this house is priced at 200, but I've looked at everything up to 215, and I haven't seen any house this nice. So I'll tell you what. I'd be willing to pay 215 for this house, even though it was listed at 200. So you can grab out this form. Add it to your offer, and you can say, okay, well, what do you think it would be worth? You know, let's say we have financing, but the other offer might be cash. So maybe they're looking at the cash offer, you know, more heavily, even if ours was more. What do you think it would take to change somebody's mind to take your offer over cash? And maybe the client decides, you know what, $2,000. You know, if I was $2,000 higher than even a cash offer, they would probably take my offer. You know, it's a guess. You don't know. You're talking through scenarios with your client. So you could put, we'll beat the next best offer by $2,000 and up to, we said we were willing to pay $215,000, up to $215,000. So you have a little bit of protection there, because if the other four offers, if everybody went full price at $200,000, you don't automatically go to the 215. You would go to 202. You would add $2,000 to your offer
with a maximum of 215.
With a maximum of 215. So if all the other offers stopped at 200, then you would go, say, only to 202.
And then if someone says, I see you're 202 and I raise you to 205, then you can say, okay, I raise you to 207.
Well, what happens, see,
it's
John...
It's kind of like playing poker.
It is, and it doesn't happen individually like that. But, John, what happens, here's the interesting thing that you're trying to decide in your mind. What if there is another smart agent in the other three, and you both put in escalation addendums?
Ooh.
What happens is each other's escalation addendum now automatically escalates you to the top price.
Oh.
So if there's another buyer using an escalation addendum, you're going to each bump each other up until you're at the upper limit of the other. So say the other offer escalated to 210. They offered 200 but had an escalation addendum to 210. Their offer would automatically escalate to 210. Then yours would be 2,000 more than that. So your net price would be 212. So those are the options. Now, there's a third or fourth or fifth. There's many options I can talk to you about. But to keep it simple, we were just talking about how a buyer's supposed to get that property now. Now, here's another option. The seller now has seen your escalation addendum. Let's say the seller has three other offers and they're all at 200. Okay. And they've got yours with the escalation addendum that says you'll go to 202, but you no higher than 215. The seller, if they want to, can counter your escalation offer. They could take out your escalation addendum and they could say, you know what, John? I think that buyer just told me they're willing to go to 215. Let's take out the escalation addendum and just counter them at 215.
Ooh.
We don't have another offer to get them that high. but let's counter them at 215 and see what they'll do. So you take out the escalation of denim, and I send it back to a mechanic. I say, you know what? Your deal was close. It's not the highest. We're thinking about just keeping it on the market another week, but I'll tell you what, we'll wrap it up at 215. Now the buyer has a really hard choice to make. How hard is the other party bluffing, etc.? Are they bluffing? Maybe there's more offers coming in the next 2 days. So I tell you what, those situations get real complicated really fast. And most of the people we run across in the situation don't even know probably half of the options I just described. And I'm just looking at my pinky finger getting started for this show.
Another reason why you would never want to do a FSBO.
And so the difference is, you know, as we've been now in, you know, hundreds of these multiple offer situations.
Because of the diminished amount of homes in the market.
Which has helped us evaluate just hundreds of strategies and nuances and differences in those offers. And so those are a couple of the points that we bring up in what I call just kind of looking at the ins and outs of multiple offers. I mean, we've seen situations too that surprise people sometimes too, and risks that don't always happen, but sometimes sellers aren't prepared for. We've seen three offers come in on a Friday night. We've seen a seller want to go to, say, highest and best by the next night. And the three offers that came in didn't want to be in a bidding war. You told them to go highest and best. And guess what? All three of them went away and withdrew their offers. And so you're balancing how good is this market? How good is the property? And what do I want my strategy to be? Now, that's a rare scenario, but I tell you what, you have to know in your mind that that's also an option. Mm-hmm. And it's shocking. I mean, when it happens, you think to yourself, oh, this can't possibly be the case. I had three offers yesterday, and now I'm standing around and I've got zero. But it happens, and we've seen it happen. And so we're prepared for those situations and what could possibly happen versus, say, not being prepared for it.
And that way the client isn't standing there looking at you like, what happened to my sale?
Exactly. And so yeah, there's a lot that goes into that situation. You know, it's a different market, and actually it takes a more skilled agent in that market to negotiate those nuances. A lot of people say, oh gosh, real estate's easy right now, you know, because I've seen these signs go up and the sold sign goes up, so it's super easy. Well, it actually takes a more skilled agent, because I've seen agents, you know, other agents, you know, leave, you know, a lot of money on the table in some of those negotiating situations. And so we just use our experience to practice, keep our agents on point for those situations, and represent our clients the best possible way we can. So, McKay, I know I'm jumping up and over time, but that in a nutshell is some of the multiple offer strategies we're looking at. If you have any questions at all, go to kenmoreteam.com, shoot us a message. We'd be glad to help out.
And until next time, join us on the Tri-Cities Real Estate Update.